my name is Dave Hannity, and there will be no encore. Welcome to episode 60 of the No Encore Music Podcast. I have returned to take my throne once again. Heavy lies the crown. Craig Fitzpatrick.
It's the big one. Quizmaster, welcome back.
Yes, there was a quiz. Cullen Regan.
There was indeed.
And Craig Fitzpatrick were victorious on said quiz.
Boy, I mentioned it.
On the lads.
Yeah. Great questions, I hear.
Yes, really, Dave put the quiz together.
Really hard work.
And it was very good.
It was, although there's some rumblings that it might have been a draw.
No,
apparently
it was not
so,
a draw.
There's some dispute in terms of...
Michael the Galaxy is claiming that his team drew level at the death, but, you know...
Didn't hear it.
You guys pocketed the winnings.
So. Yeah, we pocketed
too
the winnings,
busy
yeah,
celebrating.
So that's not coming back.
To the victors go the spoils. Dave Higgins and Finola Jones also on that team. Good night had by all.
Yes, indeed.
Indeed.
Well done, Dave.
Thanks, man. Good job on the podcast last week, guys.
Oh, thanks very much.
You listened.
I did listen back to it, yeah. I mean, you know, I had some problems, but we can talk about that off mic.
We'll work
Let's
those out
Let's talk about
later.
It on mic, I think.
Okay.
No? What were your problems?
Your Gorillaz review. It was like, I was listening, it was the most 5.5, 6 out of 10 sentiment of all time. And then at the end you were like, 7, maybe an 8.
We liked a lot of the tracks.
If you listen to the copy versus the score, didn't quite match.
I feel like that's often the case, though, and certainly in recent months when I've stopped like thinking of the score beforehand, so I'm just like...
To be fair, ratings are indeed quite irritating, but sometimes you do know. You can see a film, for example, and be like, well, I know how I feel about that film.
What have you seen, Dave?
Hi, guys. I've seen King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, right, and Alien Covenant... Ask me anything.
Would I enjoy either of them?
No.
No, cool, yeah. That's about what I figured anyway.
So Guy Ritchie doing King Arthur.
Oi, oi, mate.
Is there lots of geezers?
This is the problem. This is a...
Sorry, geezers.
This is
Back
a film
Excalibur.
That... This is a film that is completely at war with itself because it feels like two different movies because they do the Cockney thing, but not enough of it. And then they always try and be a bit serious and grimdark. And at the end, Jude Law... turns into a big Mortal Kombat villain for the most indecipherable action scene you will ever witness. There's a David Beckham cameo, which takes you right out of the movie.
And he's wearing like prosthetics and stuff.
No, he has a scar.
Okay.
He's
still handsome.
He's a Kingsguard. And like literally like, you know, it's like, it's a close up. He turns around and his face is like, you know, like in the screen. And he's like, put your hand on that sword and try and pull it out of the stone, yeah?
Lots Beckham of, is.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
He gets dialogue. And I will say this, he does fine. I assume he's in the film because I guess him and Guy Ritchie dropped the kids off the same crash in LA.
Sure,
or something.
Probably. Yeah.
It's really, really odd. He doesn't get much else to do. And this is a film that has like, you know, the Cockney stuff. So you got like the phrase razzle dazzle in this King Arthur movie.
Bizarre.
That doesn't want to use the word Excalibur.
Guy Ritchie seems to have turned himself into a legit big film, like Hollywood.
Well, he's apparently...
Well, yes, although without changing any of his style or approach. He's doing a live action version of Aladdin.
With Will Smith as the genie, apparently. And he's now being tapped for the next Bond movie, perhaps, which, you know, we all... nobody needs or wants. Mm. And it's weird because like this King Arthur film is no good. Like, it's got that horrible gunmetal grey aesthetic that has permeated every... tentpole blockbuster for the last 5 years, and it's rubbish. And as a matter of fact, when I went to see it, a prominent Dublin film critic got up and walked out just as the final fight scene was about to happen.
Wow.
Can't blame him.
Yeah.
As for Alien Covenant, no.
Is that all that needs to be said?
Ridley Scott has to stop.
He'll sort it out with the next couple of sequels.
But he's almost 80 years of age, and I must say, looking very well for an almost 80-year-old man. But he is one of the great wild egomaniacs. Like, I mean, like, he really is. We have a lot in common, him and of course, Sir Ridley Scott and I. But no, I mean, like, I'm forever against the idea of just, like, taking, like, this great idea that has been put together and just demystifying the hell out of it. Right. That's what he's done. The only good thing about Prometheus was Fassbender's robot. And you were kind of like, oh, I wonder what he was up to. Well, this tells you. And not only does this tell you, but it just ties in, like, oh, well, you know, want to know how the original alien was created? No, I don't. It was scary without this nonsense retconning. And it's crap. It's
to
rubbish.
Be fair, I expected both of these movies to be a bit rubbish.
Two out of five for both.
I mean, he's exploring a universe no one's really that interested in, I feel.
But he claims that they are.
Yeah.
He's like, the fans are out there. They all want to know who the space jockey was in Alien. Hence we got Prometheus. And it was like, no one cares. Just make a good fucking movie.
Meanwhile, instead of hanging out in the dark at the cinema, Craig has spent most of the week outside playing with his cat.
The weather's been lovely.
That's not
even
been
outside. Yeah, I'm a naturist now. Naturalist? Outdoorsman?
It's one of the ones that wears clothes.
I was wearing clothes. I was fully clothed. Yeah, the cats have, like, they're now at an age where they're slightly allowed out for a bit, but you have to kind of watch them because they haven't got all their shots. So they'll try to escape, but you just can't let that
like
happen.
You at 15.
Pretty much, yeah, essentially. Yeah. But yeah, great crack altogether.
Yeah, you sent videos. They seem like cool guys. Still haven't met them, though.
No.
We'll have to source them.
Waiting
out.
For an invite.
Get them on the pod?
Yeah, why not? Right. Like, are they particularly chatty?
They are, actually. All they right. might be better than me.
Meanwhile, Colm Regan, without me this time, went to the wrestling again.
Of course I did, yeah.
Although you had a gang full of Irish music scene's finest.
Yeah, quite bizarre really, wasn't it? We had Bantam, a guest of the show, friend of the show,
yeah,
was there. Dahi, Brendan Canty popped along, Joseph Sheridan. Yeah, yeah, it was quite the crew.
The Edge.
Was it good?
It was excellent, yeah.
This is Over the Top Wrestling OTT, which we frequently attend.
Yeah, we will be back there again in a few weeks' time.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, another outstanding night.
Well, the thing about wrestling is, I mean, I understand that people get a bit riled up about it.
A bit?
Yeah, a little bit.
They go mental.
No, but I mean, like, some people get very annoyed about wrestling. Some people, sure, like, kind of think, it's juvenile, it's for kids, what are you even doing, you're grown men, whatever. But I kind of feel like, especially in these trying times, if something makes you happy, you know,
and more it's, power to you.
More power to you, as long as it's, you know, obviously legal and law, yes, consensual, yeah, and all that kind of stuff. But some people really, you know, get a bee in their bonnet over this professional wrestling game. Rather. One of whom, on Twitter, decided to make his feelings known. Yeah. Kings Leon bass player Jared Folliwell put his foot in it.
Big time. Because, yeah, so, like, if anybody doesn't know, wrestling Twitter is mental, right? It's kind of like just this mix of just people who are either ironically enjoying it and will hate you for criticising them.
Sure.
Or take it way too seriously and will hate you for criticising them. Either way, there's a lot of sentiment, a lot of anger there. And when Jared Folliwell says, hey, adults, let's maybe not watch professional wrestling, you know?
I mean, come on.
I don't really like the tone.
The tone's horrible. It's so patronising and cutting. And I mean, like, I called him out myself on Twitter. Sadly, he didn't respond to my challenge. All I said was, I quoted his tweet and I said, dude, you wrote Sex on Fire.
Yeah.
I don't think he wrote Simmer it, down. To be fair.
Well, that's semantics, Craig, and they're not needed on this new segment.
He allowed those lyrics to pass.
But lots of other people got to him as well, including in the wrestling scene, and made a holy show of him. And he backtracked like crazy. He also threw a very sexist comment at Vita Scott, a professional wrestler, when he told her to close her legs.
Yeah, that one got deleted, but
but screenshots are forever, baby.
It's true. Yeah, I'm a bit disappointed. As someone that has to constantly defend Kings of Leon, I can't really defend this one.
It's pretty indefensible. Now, they are coming over to Dublin, of course, for a couple of dates, and I feel like we should have a good old-fashioned 3-on-4 handicap match. Perhaps in Over the Top Wrestling, maybe? Like,
yeah, tell you what, if they're listening right now, yeah.
Take us on.
Get us booked.
It is that kind of weird thing of, like, granted, like, Twitter, like, I mean, I'm guilty of it myself, just being like, here's what I'm thinking, and I, you know, just throw it out there. But, like, as you say, Craig, the tone of this is horrible, because it's just kind of like, what are you trying to achieve?
Very condescending. Like, but yeah, it's clearly just a flipping thing that he's like, this won't be a big deal at all. You should have gone after, like, the Flat Earth movement or something if you wanted a bigger, like, fucking, I don't know, it's a weird one. And then, yeah, obviously the follow-up, which is just, like, clear misogyny, was a bit horrible.
One of the
you'd expect better from, you know, kind of southern rockers that were, like, the sons of a disgraced preacher.
That's a gimmick. That's really a wrestling gimmick. I mean, like, and in fairness, I mean, like, one of the kind of write-ups in this does make the point that the funny part about this whole thing is that the indie wrestlers of the world, you know, they really work a lot for their craft. They travel all over the world. They, you know, kind of sleep rough. They put a lot of money into something that doesn't even give that much money back in a lot of the cases. Whereas Kings Leon get flown around the world on private jets and, you know, like, stay in nice hotels.
Well, they had their years where they were doing the circuit and they were kind of getting no, like, they should be.
But you would think that somebody who, like, you know, well,
fan of pro wrestling. I just assumed there was a massive crossover between being in Kings Leon and enjoying pro wrestling. No. It seems like a kind of logical.
I wonder if one of them, like the one who never talks and just kind of stands in the
drummer.
No, the guitarist.
Oh, Nathan.
No, Nathan is the drummer.
Is Matthew not? Well, Matthew.
The point is, I wonder if one of them is like a secretly a big wrestling fan, and maybe he was like, he's always wanted to play WrestleMania or something, and now he's like, oh, for fuck's sake.
You've ruined that one on me. Yeah. He could have been the next Pitbull and Lunch Money Lewis.
He's still going on about that epic performance at WrestleMania 32.
How could you not, man? How could you not?
Other dust-ups happening, though, on Twitter. The notoriously shy and retiring Deadmau5.
I knew someone who actually called him that.
Well, Kanye West called him that when he was ripping the piss out of him before, which is quite interesting.
No, this girl wasn't. She thought that was actually his actual name.
All right. Well, Deadmau5 has criticised Calvin Harris over the amount of guests on his upcoming new record.
Yeah, now it should be said that the upcoming Calvin Harris record, and I'm going to take a deep breath and try not to stumble over this list as I go. Frank Ocean, Travis Scott, Kalani, Future, Pharrell, Katy Perry, Big Sean, John Legend, DJ Khaled, Migos, Schoolboy Q, Ariana Grande, Young Thug, Nicki Minaj, Lil Yachty, Jesse Reyes, Party Next Door, Snoop Dogg, and is it Dram or D-R-A-M? I purposefully skipped that because I wasn't sure.
It's a lot of people is what it is.
It's a heck of a lot of people, and Deadmau5 has kind of said, ever remember when Calvin Harris was just Calvin Harris? Which is, like, yeah, I do, and I'm quite glad he's not anymore.
Yeah,
I
mean, we didn't like Calvin Harris being Calvin Harris.
Return to the avant-garde stylings of underground niche man Calvin Harris.
Like, has anybody ever said, like, acceptable in the 80s? I need more of that these days.
What the fuck? And like, to be fair, like, the tracks that he's released so far of this record are shocking.
Bangers.
Yeah. Really good, yeah. He's, like, just in the midst of some amazing renaissance, kind of because he's using his guests so well. I mean, we quite often complain about the fact that, like, these superfluous kind of guest spots, especially when it comes to, like, just get a rapper on the track. But everything he's released recently has just been, like, they've been integral to the track. This just makes no sense.
I mean, like, to be fair, like, it is interesting to go the other way where it's like, okay, fuck it, I'll just go all in. Let's just have everyone on it. And, like, the album which comes out on the 30th of June is called Funk Wav Bounces Volume 1, which I quite like. Which kind of also indicates that he's not taking this thing too seriously. Mm-hmm. It seems like it's just a bit of fun. It's a weird rant for Deadmau5, who feels quite threatened, I guess. I mean, like, he added, and I quote, "Fucking hate watching what I love to do get raped by popular culture for the sake of selling stupid shit for stupid people. Nothing new here, just your typical sellout rant about people who obviously know how to pander shit for the sake of capitalism. Moving on."
What does that even mean?
I have no idea.
What's the sellout?
Maybe he couldn't get the names on this list or something?
I mean, at the same time, like, as a bloke who kind of makes tens of millions rocking around in his fucking mouse helmet, like, you can't be saying, like, people are selling out and taking on an image. Really, mate? Really?
I think they should settle their differences in the ring.
We're just going to make everyone here wrestle.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Can I say, just before we move on, that I saw Calvin Harris when he was just Calvin Harris. I once went to a gig.
Tell us all.
I went to a gig in Cork and it had finished after like 40 minutes and I was just really pissed off. And I knew Calvin Harris was playing across the road. So I walked up and I was like, "Hi, Colin O'Regan, I should be on the guest list." I wasn't, right? And the guy at the list just went, "Robert O'Regan, did you say, is it?" And I just went, "Yep."
Poor Robert.
I know, yeah. Poor Robert was locked out of that gig. If you're listening, I apologise.
Wow. Was it worth it?
It was perfectly mediocre.
Okay.
Okay.
Either way, I'm not on Twitter going, please come back.
Come to Brazil. If Bow Wow, the rapper, wanted to go to Brazil on his private jet, he wouldn't be able to, man, because he doesn't have one.
Yeah, they.
That's my link.
Okay.
Get serious now.
All right.
Yeah, great.
The rapper, formerly known as Lil Bow Wow, I believe he was given that name by Snoop Dogg when he was about 3 years old.
And he's also a luminary from Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift.
He posted a photo to his Instagram earlier this week in which he seemed to claim that he was boarding a private jet from Georgia to New York to promote his upcoming TV show, Growing Up Hip Hop. However, a photo soon circulated online claiming to show Bow Wow on a commercial flight alongside fellow passengers.
Amazing, yes.
This is kind of like an old trick, though, in hip hop, right? I mean, 50 Cent... remember he declared himself bankrupt.
Yeah.
And part of his kind of case was that actually all the photos of him with stacks and stacks of money was just to like kind of bolster his image.
Yeah,
so like this is just a hip hop.
It's good
thing,
defense,
right?
Isn't it?
Yeah, it is
quite real money.
It is quite legit flexing for the gram, like to bring back our favorite phrase.
It has started the hashtag Bow Wow challenge though, which I've quite enjoyed.
Yeah,
in some which people have basically like done this thing of like giving you one example of incredible opulence and decadence that they're enjoying, only to reveal, oh no, hang on, I'm actually sitting on a bus and that steering wheel is the seat in front of me. There's some great ones. It's really good. But Cullum, you've got your cynical detective hat on here. You think this could be a publicity stunt?
Yeah, well, so people have actually said, yeah, that Bow Wow is actually pretty canny when it comes to these sort of things. And given that he does have a TV show coming up, people think that like this will feature in the TV show and this was all a bit of a ruse. He himself has said in quite grandiose terms, "I love it. People don't understand the scientific method to my madness."
Jesus.
Just something else. But, okay, like, I really need to point out. Oh, yeah, he also said, by the way, that you know, he's not stressing it because he and the people in his group chat, which includes Wiz Khalifa and Snoop Dogg, roast each other all day. So, you know, water off a duck's back as far as Bow Wow is
concerned.
I'd
love to be in that group chat. I feel like I got to yeah. It
totally beats me, Craig and Josh.
I could definitely raise the game there for sure. What's the TV show all about?
So the TV show's Growing Up Hip Hop Atlanta, and it's like a reality TV show, which is following people who are sort of literally growing up within sort of hip hop royalty. And the cast is superb, right? It's Bow Wow, Jermaine Dupri's daughter, Lil Wayne's daughter, T.I.'s daughter, and the brother of Waka Flocka Flame.
This is fantastic. When is this? When is this airing?
I think it's starting during the summer.
Oh, we are doing an episode review. I'm serious. We are reviewing this properly.
Yeah, let's do it.
I can't wait.
How excited do you think Waka Flocka Flame's brother is when he got that phone call? Like,
it's just Atlanta, really, as well, really? Is it? Loads of spin-offs.
Just Atlanta. Presumably there's going to be spin-offs, a bit like CSI Cyber, which Bow Wow was in, and which is one of four CSI shows.
That's correct. That quiz was educational as well, entertaining.
Convinced it was five.
We all learned something.
Yeah, that was pedantic and I won't stand for it. Slightly more kind of sobering work to come, though, to the screen. Steve McQueen, the director of 12 Years a Slave, Hunger and Shame, is doing
Gas Man altogether, isn't he?
Yeah, big time. It's a triple bill of fun, isn't it? For a Sunday hangover, for sure. Get the dominoes in.
That's going to be a DVD box set to buy your worst enemies in years to come, isn't it? Steve McQueen collection.
Please watch all three of them on the same day. He is making a documentary about Tupac Shakur. Mm. And interestingly enough, this one has been authorized by the estate. And they seem to have complete trust in him. He seems to be a huge fan and kind of believes that his life has got parallels of its own, because he kind of came up studying at NYU when Tupac was a thing. And, you know, like he feels very kind of, I guess, confident and, you know, has the ability to kind of tell the story.
Yeah.
And like, one thing about this was quite interesting is that even the family themselves has said, this is going to be warts and all. Like, it's not going to be... Like, they didn't say it, but I will, like, that documentary Senna, because I enjoyed that film, but it's really more of a tribute than a documentary.
Mm. Yeah, it's a hagiography, like.
Yeah, completely. This appears to be like, hey, look, there was some bad aspects to his character, and we're going to show that too, as well as all the good stuff. So, quite an interesting choice, especially, you know, like, you know, he didn't win the Oscar for Best Director, but it won for 12 Years a Slave. I'm not a fan of his directing style at all, I have to say. I find his films to be extremely heavy going and quite belabored. He kind of has a gimmick in his films where he, like, allows the camera to just center on something for about 4 or 5 minutes while nothing really happens, and, like, it's meant to make you kind of uncomfortable. And, you know, I guess in that respect, it's powerful. But his work kind of leaves me cold, but this is a very interesting subject matter, and I'll definitely be checking it out.
Yeah, I mean, we're 20 years on from his death, and, like, considering he's such a massive kind of icon at this stage, it's kind of surprising that it's taken this long for... I know there's a film coming out this year, which is a kind of unauthorized look at his life. But we haven't seen too many kind of representations of him on screen. He's been kind of like a, you know, a bit part player in other people's movies and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's a strong documentary subject, but not too many people have actually tried to make a proper motion picture out of it, I suppose. Yeah, like you say, the fact that they are saying that it's not going to hold back is encouraging. Bizarrely, I've read a book by Asata Shakur, who's his godmother, I think, but was also like big into the Black Panthers movement and stuff like that. And again, it was extremely honest in its portrayal. Like, so if nothing else, the family seems to have background in terms of being kind of quite blunt about their own shortcomings as well as successes. So... Yeah, and as well, like, you can't picture Steve McQueen pandering.
No,
is the other thing.
And I mean, unlike, for example, let's say, like, Straight Outta Compton, which had Dr. Dre and Ice Cube as producers, and F. Gary Gray as the director, who obviously had a lot of love for them, really did gloss over some of the more uglier aspects. Stuff, so, Colm, you're a big documentary guy. Are you? Are you hyped for this?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, you see, the one weird thing though about like this is, the story has grown legs in such a way that you know you're getting an interpretation of it all the time. Like, there's no such thing anymore as sort of like the definitive account, because, well, there's five that claim to be the definitive one. So, you know, it's kind of a case of just picking and choosing bits from different takes on it, kind of piece your own one together. But the movie itself, that is probably more interesting to me.
Okay, interesting. Well, let's pick and choose from the songs of the week.
Let's indeed.
Last week, of course, you guys were quick to note that, as usual, whenever the podcast wraps up recording, something big always happens, pretty much seconds or minutes or hours after we leave. And in this case, it's the return of LCD Sound System, who dropped two tracks at the same time. Here's Call the Police. So, Call the Police, and the other song is American Dream. I mean, LCD Sound System's return to me, I kind of don't want it, even though I like the band, because I just feel like you made such a big deal out of how you were wrapping up and like the way that you did it, and now it's like, now you're back because you need the money.
And the other thing was that like the wrapping up was done so perfectly. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was like, talk about leaving people wanting more. I mean, you know, they had those Madison Square Garden shows.
Yeah, the documentary.
That was made of it. It was in 2011 and people were like, you know, there is so much left for this band and so much left for James Murphy to do. And yeah, it was the ideal time to stop, which then obviously makes any time you return probably less than ideal, I suppose.
And even, like, you know, with any kind of famed act, you're immediately just, when there's been a bit of a gap, you're thinking, okay, how does this, you know, stand up to past glories? But when you've made a point of retiring and then coming back, you kind of have to show that you're not just kind of retreading old stuff. And I kind of feel like, certainly with Call the Police, it's just exactly what you'd imagine, isn't it?
100%. Yeah. We're right down the point where, at one point, when he kind of says, like, that line about it's just moving to Berlin, I was like, this sounds like a SNL sketch of an LCD Sound System song. It's ticking the boxes for sure. And I mean, like, they went down a storm at Picnic last year. Mm-hmm. People seem to be really...
They're a lot of fun, to be fair.
People seem to be really into it. But I mean, like, I don't... I'm not mad on Call the Police. I think it sounds like a good U2 song if they were, like, trying to experiment a bit. But it is. This is, like, as box-ticking as it gets. And predictably enough, I saw a lot of kind of people, a lot of guys in their 30s, kind of being like, oh, it's incredible, I listened to it 10 times in a row today, it's so good. And it's like, nah, man, that's just passive.
It's not just another Bowie ripoff.
Nostalgia.
I mean, that guitar is just Robert Fripp on Heroes, isn't it? Like, they just keep playing that, like, same guitar. I don't know. American Dream, though,
it's
the
better.
Other track, much, much better.
Much better, yeah.
I actually really like that
Very
song.
Melancholic. And
it has those kind of deep, as you say, melancholic synths that you'd kind of, like, the likes of Someone Great, like that kind of thing.
Seems a bit more honest as well.
Yeah,
a lot more. And that's something that I think probably has changed. If you're to pick one thing that's sort of noticeable in these two tracks as opposed to what we were used to from LCD Sound System, is that James Murphy has very much grown into his role as a sort of a lyricist and I suppose the centerpiece of the band. He was once maybe a kind of a de facto frontman where, you know, he was very much the musical engine room, but was probably, you know, center stage because they needed somebody to do the vocals. Whereas now, as a lyricist and as the sort of emotional heart of the band, he's very strong. And on American Dream, you can definitely hear that.
Completely. And I mean, Call the Police as well is just so over-egged. Like, the musical arrangement as well. Like, it doesn't just rip off Bowie.
It's going to be a banger live, though.
Talking
you know
heads.
That.
Yeah, but like, it's also like, it's so designed. I mean, it feels like a kind of like a distant cousin that hasn't spoken to all my friends in 10 years.
Yeah, the other thing as well, though, is that like, I find it really weird when like that really strong rebellious streak runs through the track and you're like, dude, you retired and ran a wine bar in Williamsburg. You can't talk about like fighting the power here.
And you very much came back for the money. Like, I mean, that was an explicit thing. Like, it was like, oh, how much will Coachella pay? Oh, cool, let's do it. Like, and hey, look, fuck it, do it. I mean, like, you know, make hay while the sun shines. But it is that thing of like, I mean, like Nine Inch Nails did a similar thing in as much as like they had this big farewell in 2009. But it never really felt like it was going to be the end. Everyone kind of knew. Everyone was kind of like, no, they're not going to stop forever. So it didn't feel too dishonest. It just does. I mean, like, I feel like if you bought into that ending, because that ending actually was a fresh kind of big chapter for that story, which added this kind of layer of lore to the band.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, we're back with a fine 6-minute disco song. Here
the
it is.
One thing that I'll say, yeah, is that, I mean, you know, if there's more like American Dream on this record, then that's fair enough. Like, when you have a returning band, just don't half-arse it, basically. Mm. Don't come back for a string of gigs, one new song, and then kind of go, okay,
I'll say this as well, man. Not into the whole lowercase shit they're doing with this on Spotify.
Oh, get out of it. Yeah.
Use your capital letters and use them properly.
Kind of making Motley Crue look good, right? With their whole, we're like having a legal agreement that we can't reform.
Yeah.
I think that's important for just about everybody.
Yes,
though,
I think so.
Also back this week, and the answer to one of the quiz questions, here's TLC. So TLC are back, and essentially they had this big kind of social media campaign with their fans where they wanted their fans to name the new album, and I guess the fans didn't do a good enough job because it's just called TLC.
Yeah.
Obviously without Lisa Left Eye Lopez, may she rest in peace, they're down to a two piece now.
TC.
Yeah, I guess. Don't poke fun at the dead, Craig.
I'm not.
That's what you're doing. It's a really bad habit that you have, you know, man. It's like, they're not here to defend themselves. Why do you do it? What kind of kick do you get out of it, man?
I'll have an apology next week.
She's dead.
Another
statement.
You know what you are, Craig? You're a hater.
A hater.
This song is called Haters.
Yep.
And they really, it's very subtle, isn't it? I mean, like I wasn't really sure, like that it was about haters.
It's horrific. Like, I mean, if someone had told me that this is the first single from like some child star who's just left her Nickelodeon show and is sort of trying to break into the Instagram happy kid market, you'd write a song like this, and it would probably make sense. The weird thing with TLC doing this as well is that they did it far better about 20 years ago with Unpretty.
Yeah.
That was probably one of the first songs that I can remember, at least, that took such a blatant direction like that. And yeah, it did an awful lot better than most of what we heard since. And definitely better than this. This sounds like the sort of song that a producer keeps in a stack in the corner of the studio until somebody comes in with enough money that he can kind of trick them into buying it.
I mean, I don't think it's really as offensive as you seem to think it is.
No.
Kind of endearing.
It's
harmless is the word.
But do you want harmless from a big comeback?
No.
No, you want a statement. You want really impressive production now, so you want really impressive vocal delivery. You want hooks and like kind of that kind of thing to really kind of sink your teeth into. And it's just, it's as generic as it gets. It's not even produced that well.
No, it's like, just stripped of all of that kind tinny. Of, yeah, that depth and that kind of the R&B roots that they had. It just, yeah, it sounds very, very one-dimensional.
I think what annoys me, though, is that like it just stinks of cynicism. And that, yeah, I mean, you know, we talked about when you see a band coming back and you know it's for the money or something like that. And this just sounds like there's so little artistic worth behind it.
You don't think TLC still have big things to say?
I don't know. I guess we'll find out.
2017?
Is there any 90s kind of pop / hip hop / you know, just kind of group that haven't reformed at this stage?
Blackstreet?
Okay.
Yeah, Eternal.
Eternal, okay.
The Honeys?
Yeah. Oh, the Honeys. Remember them. Cleopatra, coming at you.
Mystique?
We could go for hours
okay,
here.
Yeah,
no
sorry,
mercy.
Yeah. Hey, I'm very sorry.
Remember who? Yeah, yeah. Like, didn't think that one through, did you? Did not know who you were fucking with.
Yeah.
Remember that that Electric Picnic when we were all going back to the B&B and we were singing Mystique?
Oh my god.
A little conversation, baby.
Chill.
Let's not reenact it now.
Scandalous, man. You know what, Alan? Can I have a blast of Scandalous, please? You're dangerous, just get it up. The way you move, so scandalous. It's all about the two of us. A one night stand just ain't enough. I need some stimulation, baby. A little conversation, maybe. You got me standing up like crazy. There goes my baby. Yeah, man, that's a banger. I love that one.
It is a banger, yeah.
Okay, also back amongst us this week, it's The National. I thought that this would all work out after a while. Now you're saying that I'm asking for too much attention. Also, no other fate is light enough for this place. We said we'd only die of lonely sea. The system only dreams in total darkness. Why are you hiding from me? Now, this is a very interesting wordy title. The system only dreams in total darkness. Sounds like a Soul Wax song, but it doesn't sound like a Soul Wax song when you listen to it. You know, The National are famed for rocking out like their songs at their gigs and like kind of really kind of giving them an extra bit of elevation. Here, they've decided to do that on record by adding a guitar solo.
Yeah, it's very odd, isn't it?
It's very strange, isn't it?
And it's a bit like a kind of Coldplay, Johnny Buckland awkward guitar solo.
A little bit.
It's not really too rocking.
Yeah, a little bit. This trails a new record, Sleep Well Beast, I think it's called.
Yeah, that's right.
Coming out in September.
Yep.
They've announced two gigs in Vicar Street.
Yep. One in the Cork Opera House, bizarrely.
Very, very nice. If you've never seen The National before, I would say go to them. I've seen them 5 times, and there was a point in my life when I was like, I could go see them every week. And by the time I went to that 5th gig, I think you're actually out of Craig as well.
Yeah.
I was kind of like, yeah, it's time for me to take some time off.
I'll do.
I do love them. I think they're fantastic. I do kind of feel that they are running out of road and have been for a little while. But this song is okay. It's good.
Yeah, it's interesting. Rather than running out of road, I think it's almost that they've got a little bit too much going on individually at this point. Obviously, Aaron Dessner has been producing and working with like Lisa Hannigan and stuff like that. Bryce Dessner has been doing soundtrack work, I believe. Matt Berninger was obviously part of Elvoy and stuff like that. So they're kind of moving off in these weird, like, you can definitely hear, you know, that like there is pushing for soundscapes, for instance, from this track, because it does have that sort of weird ambience as opposed to something that a straight up rock band would make. It might just be a question of streamlining that a little bit and finding how to bring those strands together.
Yeah, like for me, it was a grower, to be honest. I wasn't that blown away on first listen, but I'm not entirely sure the kind of loops and bleeps and, you know, aforementioned guitar solos quite work, but I like the vocal. And I think they're taking risks that were kind of sadly absent on the last record or two, where, yeah, they seem to be running out of road. So a bit of an expansion of the sound, which is promising, and yeah, I like the delivery. Yeah.
The other thing is that I always think that a national album works far better than individual songs, because once you lyrically get the sort of full sense of where Matt is, it generally tends to be a far more deeper and enjoyable experience.
There's an interview up in Pitchfork, and comes across quite happy at the moment, and he kind of noted that they're all getting on very well. But they always seem such a nice group of lads. You're kind of like, the notion of the National, like being like some kind of Guns N' Roses dressing room, you're like, it doesn't really fly, so.
I know, yeah. And like, yeah, first time that I interviewed Matt Berninger, I was like, you're so much more good-humoured than I was expecting here,
absolutely,
dude.
Yeah. He's very much in on his own kind of mournful, dark, melancholic joke. But a band that have done so much good that you kind of always welcome a new release. But I hope that they kind of step it up a little bit. But at the same time, they've every right to kind of be in a comfort zone, because it's weird. They're never a band that I would have thought that blew up to the level that they did. So, you know, fair enough. But so far, I'm interested, and we'll see what happens. Finally this week, a band that I think Craig Fitzpatrick is a big fan of.
Mm-hmm.
It's Grizzly Bear. Called Three Rings. I found it very experimental and enjoyable, and it's about 5 minutes long, and I could listen to another 5 minutes.
Yeah, it's 6 minutes long, in fact, and it never does feel like a chore. It never feels like it's dragging.
Yeah, it's constantly kind of shifting, and it's very much business as usual for them, which is strange because they've been away for 5 years. But it reminds me of their last record, Shields, which was just a brilliant piece of work and very kind of compositionally interesting and daring, and they're just kind of masters of their craft. And yeah, this is great.
What I love is that after 5 minutes you're kind of like, holy shit, when did this become a triumphant anthem?
Yeah,
you know. Yeah. It kind of creeps up on you a little bit, and I've always felt that as far as Grizzly Bear is concerned, the bass is just underrated as being like the driving force for that band.
I was actually just about to ask, do you think they're a band that gets their due?
No, definitely not.
I think they're one of those bands who you could almost blame with this whole conversation, you know, rock and roll is dead, because they're so unassuming and actually rewarding of kind of, you know, prolonged listens and intellectual. They don't kind of grab you as immediately interesting or kind of arresting with hooks and stuff, but they're worthy of your time. So yeah, definitely underrated, I think.
I think they've also kind of missed their time a little bit, as in, like, you know, if a Yellow House, for instance, had come out like, say, 3 years later during the fucking like Flea Foxes explosion and stuff like that, feel like it could have been a little different for them.
Definitely, yeah. Now, Craig, you might say that, even flippantly, that rock and roll is dead, but I think I think it's anything but. Listeners, if I could ask you to just please make sure that your roofs are reinforced and that there's no delicate china in the room or
move
anything.
The dog out to the back garden for
maybe
a minute.
Maybe even just go outside and listen to this, because, you know, like structural damage could incur, and I wouldn't want that to happen. It's Kasabian! That's You're in Love with a Psycho, the lead single from Kasabian's new record, For Crying Out Loud. Now, I was in the pub on Sunday watching Man United lose, which was not enjoyable. Mm. However, also not enjoyable was they played this horrible glut of songs after the game was on, and it was every rubbish Enemy indie championed song from like 2007. And in the middle of it was You're in Love with a Psycho by Kasabian. And it was like, it just fits right in, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's such a weird choice for a lead single as well, because while I know it's tailored towards the radio, it's just got that, like, it's so just fucking humdrum.
Well, hang on. Before Craig starts talking, I wanted to say one thing, because I feel like listeners...
Let's get it in now.
No, but I feel like listeners will probably know where I'm going to stand on this record and the standing on its throat, as it were. It's a case of this, right? This album, even by Kasabian's low standards, is an absolute mess. To me, it sounds like someone trying to tune in an old radio, a broken old radio, in a car on an especially grim journey. So, Craig, the prosecution rests.
This was a disappointment for me, but low standards, really? I feel like you haven't given Kasabian a fair shake over the years.
I have.
I feel like you've bought into an image they stupidly kind of started portraying, like, themselves as these kind of like sub Oasis lads, and we're saving lads. Rock and roll. They've always been so much more interesting than that, though. Mm. They actually take chances. They, like, some of the records in the past have been very, very interesting and totally outside that lad rock thing, and they can write a tune when they want to. With this, it's a bit kind of bog standard, and I don't know if the whole disco thing that they seem to be pursuing, and when I say disco, I mean like 1978 Some Girls, Rolling Stones trying to do disco.
Yeah.
I don't know if that quite suits them, but there are some tracks on here that I have to say I enjoyed. I mean, You're in Love with a Psycho, it has that thing of like a Where Did All the Love Go, in terms of the chorus kind of works for me, in that it's not your kind of big bellowed out thing, it's not the obvious choice, and I think they need to be applauded for that sometimes. They actually take interesting choices.
It's a football terrorist chant.
Yeah,
I don't think it is.
But it's not spirited enough. And I do feel like, you know,
that's the thing. When they nail it, they're brilliant fun.
But you see, I don't think they've committed enough to that sort of aesthetic here. It's like the last
they
shadow
haven't committed to any one
aesthetic.
This
shadow
is all over the place.
Did this sort of music relatively well, and certainly did it relatively completely. Whereas You're in Love with a Psycho and Good Fight shortly after it just have this weird, just sort of half-baked, sort of chill-out lounge rock feel or something. And it doesn't work. The thing is, though, that they come either side of two tracks that you kind of go, okay, I see exactly what Kasabian are doing here in terms of writing songs that are going to bolster the live set. The first track, Il Rey, there's another one, 24/7. And you're just like, yeah, these are main stage festival bangers. The last time I saw Kasabian was in an arena in December, and they still played like they were in the main stage of a festival. Uh-huh. And it was all kind of, you know, Dublin, show your fucking hands and all the rest of it. And you can kind of see that they're trying to capture that at the start of the record. After the halfway point, though, I don't know what happens, but shit slows down. And suddenly you realise how phenomenally weak most of this is.
They're a good band to give you like an endorphin rush, but they've never been a band that's capable of like making you feel anything on an emotional level. So when they slow it down, it's really not their strong suit. And particularly, like, I think Serge is a great writer. I actually like his voice. Tom Meehan, he's a good kind of rock frontman. He's got no versatility in terms of his voice or anything like that. He can't lend himself to different types of stuff.
Or real emotion as well. And it's quite a strange one because, like, as I say, after that halfway point, when they get a little bit more, you know, slow and intimate and gentle and so on and so forth. And
the party never ends. Yeah, I mean, like this is where he's at his most cypher-like. Yeah, the guy has a certain charisma,
mm-hmm.
and he can definitely, you know, lead an arena. And that shouldn't be undersold. That is a skill.
Yeah.
But as you say, I don't really care for the words that are coming out of his mouth, and he doesn't have the range, he doesn't have the relatability, he doesn't have the emotion, the conviction. He lacks the courage of his own conviction because he talks a big game, but I think when it comes to the crunch, doesn't have it.
And it's a slightly worrying thing when you feel that the songs that probably have the most emotional and artistic investment are probably the songs that struggle most. Songs like The Party Never Ends, songs like 16 Blocks. And there's one, Are You Looking for Action, which is interminable.
And it's 8.5 minutes long. Yeah. It's never incredible. It never gets out of its own gear. It's like a loop that plays in a shop that wants you to leave the shop.
You're it kind like... of it weirdly sounds like. I think the problem with this record is they should fully embrace the kind of gonzo, psychedelic, cartoon rock thing that they are.
Yeah.
And just like, I want the riffs to be bigger. I want them to, you know, just go kind of all out. I want them to take chances like past records, West Rider Pop or Lunatic Asylum, where they were just kind of like, deck it, we're throwing everything at the wall. It made no sense and it worked somehow. It sounded like spaghetti western soundtracks. It was great. But with this, it just sounds like they're in a very... Like that track in particular, it could be a Girls Aloud song. It really could. Yeah. Like it should just be playing in a shop, like just over the kind of... And it kind of then transforms into an almost House of Jealous Lovers rapture kind of thing. But yeah, it's just watered down. I don't know.
There's a part of me that wonders if at this stage in their career, Kasabian will just go, right, we'll take 3 or 4 songs from this that we can keep in our live set and then just move on.
Yeah, it feels that way. It feels like here's an album to justify a tour,
yeah,
which can happen. And again, like, you know, you understand the marriage and the union of doing that for bands. It makes a lot of sense. You gotta, you know, it's a business, it's a game, all that kind of stuff. But I like to think that even the most diehard Kasabian fan would be disappointed by this because it's just not interesting. And also, I want to have a word with whoever mixed and mastered this because they were asleep at the switch.
Also, whoever put the track listing together, because I haven't seen an album as top loaded as this in a while.
Yeah, it's just, it's very strange.
Yeah, it's the all that you can't leave behind of the Kasabian canon, is that what you're saying?
I do think they're a band with, I mean, when they, like, knock it out of the park, they really do. Like, I genuinely love a lot of their
songs. How much this comes from a place
of
seeing them live and being really bowled over, though?
No, I mean, I went to see them live because I was a fan of their work. I mean, the likes of Underdog, Shoot the Runner, it really is kind of disengage your brain a bit. But my God, you can get caught up with them. And they can really write a tune. They really can. So this is just very tepid, which is the worst thing you can say about them. It should be dreadful or it should be amazing.
Yeah, that's true. like in the middle is always annoying to deal with. But do you think that's because they punch themselves out or do you think that they try too hard?
I feel like the writing isn't strong enough. I think you have this thing where Serge he writes everything. So Tom doesn't really have much of a say. I think he just said, make it a party album because he was going through a bit of a messy breakup or whatever. He's actually talked openly about how much he struggled over the past year or so. He said it was the worst year of his life. Then you listen to this, which are songs written by his mate that he's singing, but they're kind of like, cheer up, we'll have a party, it's grand. And it just... It doesn't match up emotively. It doesn't, the kind of, I don't know, the atmosphere of it doesn't quite work. It's kind of like they weren't all on the same page.
Yeah, I feel...
They just don't sell it.
And I feel as though they're pulling punches. Yeah. As you say, I mean, like, they lack conviction, both in terms of, like, the sonic aesthetic that they go for at times, the vocal delivery and that sort of emotion, and really... You know, like, yeah, we talked about, you know, like in an interview, they said, like, you know, what a difficult time Tom had gone through and they were drawing on that for the record. Like, if you're going to do that, you know, really do it. This kind of feels just, yeah, you know, kind of cursory, kind of perfunctory.
Even a track like Wasted, which could lean on those kind of moments, is dressed up in such a generic kind of stop-start beat thing that kind of calls back to different... eras, I suppose, and you're kind of like, well, this should be a good song. Why isn't it?
Yeah, they're kind of leaning on... the last record was, you know, very much electronic-inspired, and with this, they're kind of still on this almost new wavy kind of trip, which isn't their strong suit at all. They should just be your classic guitar rock band. I mean, that's what you want them to say, with kind of additional stuff thrown in. And, yeah, it's...
Definitely example of a record that the usual kind of associated bluster of rock and roll is dead, we're here to save us, just really blows up in their faces in this time out. For me, it's 3 out of 10.
Oof, that's tough. I would go 5. There's a couple of songs at the start that are bearable.
Yeah,
quite good, in fact. Yeah. No, I'll go further than that. Songs that are good at the start, but yeah, it quickly fades to nothing.
Yeah, it's smack bang in the middle at 5, and I'm a real fan. I wanted to come in and kind of, you know, sing their praises and be a big supporter, but yeah, it's a 5 for me.
Okay, anything else of note to listen to?
I haven't heard too many full albums of late, but a couple of tunes from sort of records that are coming out in the next couple of weeks.
That's okay. Yeah,
should be pretty exciting.
I've been listening to Julie Burns' latest record.
It's great, isn't it?
It's really good. Yeah, I think it came out January.
Not even happiness. Yeah.
Her voice is incredible.
It's fantastic. She's playing over in Whelan soon, I think, actually.
Really?
A double with another singer-songwriter.
It's a fantastic record, yeah.
Are you not going to name these tunes, Colin? Like, that was very mysterious.
Oh, no, like we've covered half of them before. I'm not talking about like obscure things that I've been digging up.
So you essentially
just
said you have been listening to music.
And yes. Enjoying it.
Yeah. Okay. Just want to confirm so that you know I've been doing my homework.
I've dipped back into my old teenage CD collection, but wait, no, come back. I swear it's good. A great band that I feel never really got their due, a band called Amen. I'm not sure if you guys have ever given them a go. Now, they're a very Kerrang sponsor. They had a singer called Casey Chaos, which I could totally understand. Which I could totally understand.
All right, folks, I'll be back next week.
Would be a red flag. It's a wrap on Colin Morrigan. But they have released a few records before in the past. One is self-titled. The other one is called We Have Come For Your Parents. We Have Come For Your Parents would possibly be in my top 10 favorite records by anybody. I think it's fantastic.
Well, okay.
An excellent punk band. Great, great songs. And the first song, or the first song on the first record, The Amen, is called Coma America. And it just kind of like came on randomly, and I hadn't heard it for so long, and I was like, holy shit, this still bangs. This is fucking awesome. If you've never heard Amen, give them a go. Although what I would say is, We Have Come For Your Parents, frustratingly, isn't on Spotify, but some kind soul has uploaded the whole thing to YouTube.
Okay.
So take the 40 minutes or so and just give it a go. You'll either like it or you won't, and you might even love it, as I do.
Actually, now that I think about it, just one thing to mention is that we haven't covered New Phoenix on the show yet.
Oh, shit, that's true. Yeah.
They dropped a new single a couple of weeks ago. I've heard one or two more tracks from that record, and it sounds like it's going to be a return to form.
Does it sound like a Phoenix album?
It does, but a good Phoenix album, as in
Phoenix.
Like a Wolfgang Amadeus Phoenix album.
No, I don't
Phoenix
hate Phoenix
album.
But it's just very kind of like...
They're a good French band. How often does that happen?
What on earth? Like, do you think there's some sort of show band doing the theme song for BBC sports shows or something?
That's not far off.
Yeah. I'm a huge Phoenix fan, I must say.
They're
just
poppy French strokes, which is great.
That's all you ever need, man. Yeah. That pretty much sums you right up. Gentlemen, thank you so much.
You're
Thank
welcome.
You, welcome back.
Thanks, man. Good to be back. As always, to play us out, we will have some new Irish music. This is a band called Sights. I was in the band once called Sights Distorted, so I'm not going to sue them for any kind of weird publishing or anything. Irish-Scottish duo, Tony Edison and Mia Fitz, came together during songwriting sessions for other artists, but apparently they were so good at it that they decided to go it alone. Or together, I should say. One of them played with Hozier for a few years, but don't hold that against her. You know, we all have to make money. It's fine. This song is called Lights Out. I quite enjoy it. My name is Dave Hanrady. This has been No Encore. There will be no encore. Catch you next week.
I gave you everything. I let you in to see every piece of me, my deepest insecurities. And it was so right for the first while. I never could have seen you turn and try and walk on me. So I'm taking them back. I'm taking them back. All the pieces that I gave me, I'm taking them back. I'm taking them back now. You didn't deserve these parts of my heart. All the time I put my heart out, that every piece of me was burnt out, and you just left me with the lights out. So I'm taking them back. choices that I gave him. I'm taking them back.
HPN, the Headstuff Podcast Network. See headstuff.org for more details.
I quite enjoy it.